Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on this Wednesday here on WKOK. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory, all with great warranties. Great pre-owned inventory with the all-important Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a fabulous service department, great technicians. In fact, they need more technicians. They do great work there, and they take care of the life of your vehicle. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. A big day in Major League Baseball with Aaron Judge signing the 9-year, $360 million deal with the Yankees. It's something the Yankees absolutely had to do, but here is the reality of it. Okay, so let's get to, like, Matt's going to be euphoric, jumping up and down, the whole thing like a little kid at Christmas. But essentially what the Yankees have done, the difference between what the Phillies have done and what the Yankees have done is this. The Phillies got better. The Yankees broke even. Right? That's the reality. Let me explain it. The Phillies signed Walker, which really bolsters their rotation. Big. They signed Trey Turner. Speed, shortstop. Now Bryson Stott can go to second base. The Phillies, on paper, are better. Judge is a great player. Best in the game. He and Shohei Ohtani, you can go back and forth as to who's the best in the game right now at this point. But the reality is this. They re-signed him. Which means instead of getting worse, because they would have been worse without him, they didn't get better, but they broke even. And for the Yankees, that's the best case scenario. They broke even. The Yankees have a lot of holes, without question. But they needed at minimum to break even. The Yankees broke even. The Red Sox, for example, today got better. They signed Kenley Jansen. They needed a closer. They got a closer. So the Red Sox, even though Jansen is not Aaron Judge, not by a long shot, but the Red Sox as a team got better because they made an addition that made them better. The Yankees, right, didn't get better, but the key was they didn't get dramatically worse, because if Judge had gone to the Giants, the Yankees would have probably fallen back into the middle of the pack in the American League. By signing Judge, it keeps them right in the neighborhood of being at the top, and the reality is they broke even, right? And the Yankees desperately needed to break even, and they did. 9 years, $360 million, $40 million a year for Judge. Not a bad deal. All right, Rose Bowl coming up. We'll hear from the two coaches, and then Chris Soleri next half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. The Nittany Lions, of course, going to the Rose Bowl. Next week, Bill Riley, the voice of Utah football, will be joining us. He'll be with us on Monday. And talk with Jack this morning. Jack Ham will join us on the show next week. We'll just pick out the day that he will be on the show. But Jack will be on the show next week to preview the Rose Bowl. The two coaches, James Franklin of Penn State, Kyle Whittingham of Utah, had a chance to talk with the media. So let's listen into what they had to say earlier this week.
Yeah, you bet. We're elated to be back in the Rose Bowl. Second trip in as many years. It was a great game last year versus Ohio State. Went right down to the wire, came up on the short end, obviously. But our guys had a great experience. Rose Bowl, you know, I've been to quite a few of the bowls and the New Year's Six bowls, and Rose Bowl is special. And we're going to travel well. Our fans are going to be showing up, and we should have great support there. Players, like I said, are very excited to go back and have the experience again. And, you know, we're just looking forward to the trip. And Penn State, a tremendous opponent. Been doing a little research on them. You know, play great defense. A couple really good backs, nearly 1,000 yards each. You know, turnover margin in their favor. I mean, they do a lot of really good things. Good things that really good football teams do. And so it reminds me of us in a way, you know, the way we approach the game and how we go about our business. But Coach Franklin, got all the respect in the world for him, what he's done there. I've had a chance to meet him a few times in person. Don't know him real well, but know enough to know that he's, you know, a heck of a football coach. And we know it's going to be a big challenge for us. And like I said, we're excited to be there.
Thank you, Coach. Coach Franklin?
Yes, truly appreciate the opportunity. Obviously, you know, the history and the tradition of the Rose Bowl speaks for itself. We had a phenomenal experience last time we were involved. And our players and staff could not be more excited about making the trip again. Obviously, got a ton of respect for the University of Utah, their history, their tradition, and Coach has done a phenomenal job there. I was able to watch their game the other night. What a great game for college football. And they played so well and really played well all season long. So you know, we're just getting started with the breakdowns and trying to kind of understand who they are. It's one thing to watch the game on TV as a somewhat of a fan. It's another thing to study them and break them down. But really good football team, coached extremely well, an experienced, gutsy quarterback who's a competitor. And this is going to be a great game. You know, I think there's obviously some really cool facts. You know, the fact that Penn State's played every you know, Pac-12 school except for Utah. It's not too often in 2022 that you're able to do things for the first time ever. So that's really cool. And then, you know, for Penn State, you know, we played in this game 100 years ago. So, you know, really, really excited about this opportunity. And there's a ton of cool facts and things about it. But at the end of the day, we got to go out, represent the Big Ten well and play well for our Penn State community.
Thank you, Coach. We'll now open up the teleconference for questions. Please raise your hand to ask a question using the raised hand icon within Zoom. If and when your question is selected, we will unmute your microphone. Please state your name and media outlet before asking your question. Once your question has been answered, your microphone will be muted and your hand will be lowered. Our first question will come from Rich Scarcer. I'm going to butcher your last name, Rich. I'm sorry. But we'll come from Rich Scarcella.
Rich Scarcella from the Reading Eagle. This is for James and Kyle. Does the Rose Bowl, is it a more inviting game, do you think, for your players who are considering not playing in the bowl game because last year obviously was a problem with Penn State? Is this a more inviting game for those who might be on the fence?
Go ahead, Coach.
Okay, thanks, Kyle. Yeah, for Penn State specifically, you know, obviously in my 12 years as a head coach, had never had an opt-out until last year. You know, and I think that's a challenge across college football right now. I think that's why there's a lot of conversations going on about expansion and things like that. But, you know, obviously the Rose Bowl, whether you're a coach or whether you're a fan or whether you're a player, the Rose Bowl holds a special place in a lot of people's, you know, perspective. And, you know, I think obviously playing in that type of game and, you know, on that type of stage, and against an opponent like Utah, I think it helps. You know, so we expect you know, that almost the entirety of our team will play and compete. But that is a challenge in general, you know, for college football right now.
Yeah, as far as University of Utah, you know, we had no opt-outs last year. Everybody played. Fully expecting that to happen this year doesn't mean it necessarily will, but I've heard nothing of the sort to think any differently. Rose Bowl, you know, terrific game, obviously right in the heart of our recruiting footprint. You know, we have a ton of guys from Southern Cal on our team that are going to be excited to play in front of friends and family. And so you never say never, but right now we anticipate everybody playing and but you know, things happen, but right now that's not the case. And we're excited to make the trip down.
Our next question will come from Joe Smeltzer.
Hey, Joe Smeltzer, Nittany Sports Now. This one's for James. Coach, obviously Sean has been through a lot in his time at Penn State. What does it mean to you as his coach to have him end his college career on a stage like this?
Yeah, I'm happy for him. I'm happy for the whole senior class. You know, Kyle's been through it as well with COVID and everything else that these guys have experienced throughout their career. It's been different. And, you know, Sean's just a guy, you know, he's been, you know, he's really represented our university and our football program the right way, both on and off the field in his entire career. And he's been doing it for a long time. I'm going to check the picture of that Rose Bowl game played 100 years ago, make sure Sean wasn't in it, because he's been playing football at Penn State for a long time. And he's maximized that entire experience. You know, he's maximized it as a student, as a student athlete. You know, he's going to go on and be a very, very successful businessman after his football career is done. And he's done it the right way, and he's done it with class. So I'm happy for him. I'm proud of him. And I know he's going to prepare like crazy to go out and play the best he possibly can, you know, against a really tough opponent.
Our next question will come from Joe Reedy.
Joe Reedy, Associated Press. Just for both Kyle and James, just wondering your feelings about playing in this game, considering it might be the last traditional Pac-12 Big Ten matchup for a while.
Why don't you go ahead, James? Any question that's for the both of us, since they're the visiting team, we'll let them go first every time. Then we don't have to go through that. So go ahead, James.
Yes, you know, obviously, you know, again, when you talk about the college landscape, it has changed. And, you know, I think your point is a good one. We're going to be looking at a very different model here moving forward. So, yeah, I think, you know, there's some history when you talk about, you know, the traditional Big Ten, Pac-12, you know, matchups. And specifically when it comes to the Rose Bowl and the significance of the Rose Bowl on both of our conferences for as long as you can, you know, remember. So, yeah, we understand the importance of that and the magnitude of that. But again, at the end of the day, you know, we just got to do everything we possibly can to prepare and play well against a really good opponent.
Yeah, from our perspective, you know, I grew up in the shadow of the Rose Bowl down there in Southern Cal, and you know, what a great tradition. Look forward to it every single year. And you know, things are changing, as you mentioned. And I think that's, you know, there's going to be major changes, in my opinion. I mean, huge changes in college football. And it's going to be pretty much unrecognizable in the next 5-6 years compared to what it is now. But we're excited to be able to play in the Rose Bowl this year, like I said, in the traditional fashion and in its traditional time slot and all that type of stuff. And so I can just speak for us being elated, as I mentioned, to be there. And the Rose Bowl experience last year was tremendous. And we expect, more of the same this year.
Our next question will come from Joshua Newman.
My question was just answered, so somebody else can go. Thank you.
Thanks, Joshua. Our next question will come from David Melandra.
David Melandra with Nittany Central. This question is for both teams. What was your first impression when you heard that you guys would be facing off against each other in the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, for us at Penn State, you know, obviously, you know, you look at the University of Utah and the success that they've had under Kyle's leadership, you know, to me, it was exciting. And then, you know, right away, I started to think about, you know, when has Penn State played Utah from a historical perspective, and, you know, found out, obviously, this is the first time, you know, playing each other. So I thought that was, you know, that was something that was, I think, really cool and exciting for our fan base and for our players as well. And then after just, watching them play here recently, tough, hard-nosed, disciplined, gritty team, that finds ways to win all different ways. And, got a ton of respect for what they do and how they do it. And it's going to be a tremendous challenge. So, that's kind of the first thing I thought of when I heard who the matchup was against.
Yeah, me, I would echo a lot of the same things that Coach Franklin just pointed out. I didn't realize that it was the first time that the two teams will have ever played each other. But I've been a college football fan since, my dad played pro football, coached for many years. So I've been a football fan forever. And, watched Penn State from afar. What a great tradition. That place is, I've never been to a game there, but it looks nuts, to play in that stadium with those crowd, with that crowd and those fans. Of course, Joe Pa, was, what I grew up with, him being the guy at the helm. And so just excited. It's a storied program, a lot of tradition, a lot of history, ton of success through the years. And we're relatively new on the scene, compared to what they've got going and what they've had historically. And so we're excited to play and excited for the challenge. And like Coach said, we got all the respect in the world as well for their program.
Our next question comes from Josh Furlong.
Yeah, Kyle, can you hear me? Does this work?
I got you, Josh. Yes, sir.
Okay. A couple weeks ago, you talked about 9-3 wasn't necessarily the record you guys were hoping for this year, but now you're back in the Rose Bowl. This is kind of the goal that you guys had wanted to obtain. What does this do for you as a program, as well as kind of people that are viewing it from an outside perspective?
Well, I think it's another step in the right direction in the evolution of our program. And we're a program that is still hopefully on the rise and trying to make our mark in college football. We had the breakthrough last year with our first Pac-12 championship. Preaching to the team all year long this year, this offseason, and all through fall camp, how it's harder to stay on top than it is to get to the top. And the challenge was trying to repeat. And, through some unique circumstances, we were able to do that and take another step forward. And so that's kind of my take on it, is another step forward for the program. And we've just got to keep evolving and keep progressing and stay on this trajectory.
Our next question comes from Michael Bradley.
Hi, this question is for James, Michael Bradley from the Rose Bowl program. James, Sean has meant so much to the program throughout his time there, but this year you bring in two freshman backs who were outstanding. How much does it help your offense to have that kind of balance and have two players who can run the ball so effectively?
Yeah, I think the balance that we were able to operate with this year on the offensive side of the ball, I think was, obviously a big part of our success, really, as a team, offense, defense, and special teams, to be able to, sustain drives and make big plays. And, it's unusual to do it with a freshman, let alone two true freshmen. But both of them, complemented each other really well. And, we were able to not only run the ball, but I think it created more explosive plays for us in our play action pass game as well. You mix a little RPO in there too. I think it's been really good. I think it, allowed Sean to, really kind of operate our offense from a run game perspective in terms of, how he IDs the front and sets up our blocking schemes, and same thing in pass protection. And allowed us in, maybe in some down and distance situations, which were traditional throwing downs, to be able to run the ball a little bit more. So, I think it's really helped our offense. It's helped our quarterback. I think it's helped our offensive line. Those guys have been big time players for us all year long, and we're going to need them. We're going to need them at the Rose Bowl, obviously, too.
James Franklin, Kyle Whittingham, the Rose Bowl coming up in 3.5 weeks in Pasadena. Next half hour, Chris Soleri will preview tonight's matchup, Penn State and Michigan State in the Jordan Center. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Chris Soleri, Detroit Free Press, in a few moments. We'll talk about Penn State and Michigan State coming up tonight in the Jordan Center. Big game for both teams. Big Ten opener for the Nittany Lions. It is the second conference game of the season for Michigan State after their tough loss to Northwestern last night, and last night Illinois won in overtime. They beat second-ranked Texas. Penn State will play in Champaign. That will be coming up on Saturday. But first things first, the Big Ten opener in the Jordan Center tonight for the Nittany Lions with Michigan State and Chris Soleri in a few moments. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory. And, yeah, you're like, okay, I'm going to buy new. So the benefit is that it's new, but there's another great benefit as well, the warranties. And they all have great warranties. Then, no matter what, budget always dictates. We all know that. Your budget may say, you know, I'd love to go new, but at this point in my life, it's going to have to be pre-owned. You want to have the Sunbury Motors guarantee. What a difference that makes in the comfort of the buying experience, and a fabulous service department to back it all up. Great technicians. In fact, they could use more technicians there. So if you're looking for a job, go over to Sunbury Motors. You might be able to be the perfect fit for them. All right? So it's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Penn State, Michigan State, Big Ten opener coming up tonight in the Jordan Center. Last time the two teams met was last January. Penn State did win the game, 62-58. With that, we now go out to talk with from the Detroit Free Press, who joined us just a couple of weeks ago, Chris Soleri. Chris, long time no hear. Hope you're doing well.
Feels like a long time ago, believe it or not. Yeah. It's been a long week and a half, two weeks.
I bet it has. I'll start with Michigan State basketball. How deeply affected has this Michigan State team been by Hall and Akins being out, even though Akins is back in the lineup now?
Yeah, it's tremendous because, I mean, Izzo went into this season with 10 scholarship guys, you know, he banked 3 scholarships, and, you know, people locally have been on him like, why didn't you use the portal? He really likes the chemistry that these guys have, but this is the risk. You know, when you only have 10 scholarship guys, and I think part of that is also the worry and concern about the portal and guys being unhappy and constantly having flux. So he was trying going small in terms of rosters, and, you know, once you hit a major injury like this, and then you add another one to it, it changes the dynamic of your team. Akins had off-season surgery, right before the season started. He worked his way back to play right away against Gonzaga. And, you know, he kind of tweaked it a little bit with a, you know, just a fall in the Villanova game that, it just looked like he twisted it a little bit, almost like a sprained ankle that they needed to operate cautiously with. And he came back against Northwestern the other day, and there were times where he looked fatigued and winded. But the Hall injury is a tough one because both of those guys in particular being out at the same time on the wing, you got one other wing in Pierre Brooks. I mean, they've been using Jason Whitens, who's a walk-on grad transfer. He had started previously at Western Michigan, but, that's still a drop-off. That's still a major drop-off from the guys that you had there. So, yeah, and Hall does so many little things in terms of organizing the defense and, hitting a shot and stretching defenses a little bit and attacking. So, I mean, losing one of those guys was going to be an issue, but losing both at the same spot really, really put them in a bind over the last few games.
Because I don't think there's a better, now there may be some people in the same category, but a better inside-out player in the conference than Malik Hall.
Yeah, he's close to it. I mean, he's got the ability to do it. I don't know how consistently he does it, but he certainly can step out and hit. And on top of that, he can get you with his back to the basket, hit a little turnaround. I mean, so yeah, I could see that. And it's a weird year in the Big Ten too, because I don't know how many of those kind of guys there are. When you look at the talent level, I mean, it's kind of going to be a. Someone was asking about this earlier. What's going to happen this season? It might end up being a war of attrition to who can survive and be the Big Ten champion this year. Just because I think the teams are so, call it parity, call it mediocrity. I think is what Izzo said the other day. Someone will rise above it, but I mean, it's going to be a five or six, maybe not six, but probably about four or five loss Big Ten champion this year.
Well, so now I get to A.J. Hogarth, and I thought he played really well to his credit against Northwestern. He's been okay for the most part at Michigan State. What's opened the door for him to playing better this year?
Mercurial is probably the best way to describe him, because you see the flashes. And I think it drives Tom Izzo mad because he sees the flashes of the tremendous court vision, the ability to get north and south, using his size against smaller guards, but then he'll make boneheaded decisions, whether it be trying to dribble behind his back at the free throw line and getting it picked and going the other way for a bucket, or shooting outside early in the shot clock and goes the other way for a long touchdown, turnover for a touchdown in some ways, or, making a terrible pass in a situation where he just plays under control. Something good can happen anyways. That's kind of it. There's a lot of, I'd say, sophomore year Denzel Valentine in him, in that there's a lot of things that he can do. He just hasn't figured out how to put it all together under control. I think my theory is that guys who can do many, many things well, when they try to do everything well at once, you can go off the rails.
Yep.
You can do sometimes too much. And with Hogarth, the early shot clock threes, that's not his game.
Right.
He shouldn't be doing that. And, he did that in the Northwestern game, and long rebounds go the other way for breakaway buckets, or, the turnovers that, he limited his turnovers in that game, but you watched a little closely, he made some maddening passes that would get deflected out of bounds. Those don't show up in a stat sheet as turnovers, but they kill the offensive rhythm. So there's a lot of those kind of little things that I think he needs to just embrace the teaching that Izzo has, and I think he can take that next step. It might take till the end of the year, but there's going to be a lot of push and pull between him and Izzo, I think, until then.
How has Joey Hauser, speaking of transfers, how's he been, and how about Sissoko in the middle?
Hauser's been, I'd say, mercurial as well. I mean, his shooting in particular. I mean, there are nights where he just doesn't look like he'll miss, and there are nights where he doesn't look like he'll make anything. but he's been a pretty consistent rebounder, and he's done a lot more, I think, on the defensive end because of Sissoko, they haven't had to put Hauser very often. I mean, it's against Gonzaga, they put him up against Timmy, and he got worked pretty well. But then the next game, they come out against Kentucky, and that's where, you know, you miss a guy like Malik Hall. Instead of going to Hauser against Oscar Tshiebwe, they went to Malik Hall.
Right.
And I think Hauser's better when he's playing another four. He can't go out of his position on the defensive side. If he's playing against a four, he's pretty solid. And he's been a pretty good positional rebounder. But the shot, I mean, the shot is pure. There are just times when it's just really off, and, you know, it gets a little bit. Sissoko's interesting because he had those two big games against Kentucky and Gonzaga, and everyone thought, well, we're watching the making of a star, but it's kind of fallen off since then. And I think part of that is you've got a big guy that is learning how to play those minutes again. I mean, it's, you know, kind of like how Izzo's trying to figure out when he's got four guys basically averaging 30-plus minutes a game, how to keep them fresh. You know, Sissoko just getting 20-plus a game, it's a learning curve as well. But he's got to be a little better with his hands, I think. I mean, he's struggling with catching the ball in the post and holding on to rebounds at times. But he's got that physical presence and, you know, length that he can be a disruptor inside. And, you know, they just need more from him on the rebounding side and on the defensive end.
All right, on the football side of it, this has probably contributed to a long 2 weeks for you. What has it been like on the football side as a postmortem on a 5-7 season?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think there's a lot of, well, because there was, well, I don't say concern, but there was a thought that maybe they could sneak into a 5-7 bowl bid, but, you know, those filled up pretty quickly, kind of as many people anticipated, and
yeah,
they got left out, which really was kind of everyone's thought. You can't rule it out until it's done. So that's right. One thing. But, I mean, it's now you're seeing guys. I think I had four guys in the last couple of days, all defensive linemen, enter the transfer portal. Kicker Jack Stone, who hit that 51-yarder at the end of the first half in that game, hit the transfer portal. So now you start looking at this. Is it something that's going on with the program, or is it just the nature of college football right now? Because we're seeing, I mean, where does Michigan State rank with some of those schools that have lost guys to the portal? They're not up there. I mean, you know, Alabama, I think, had like double digits.
They do. Yeah.
A couple other schools had double digit guys lost. But it's also early in the process, too. So, you know, it certainly bears watching, though, because they've got to finish up towards signing day, keep the recruits that Mel Tucker has in place, you know, a bunch of four-star kids. They already lost some of them, but that's kind of their thing now, is they got to be able to build that class. And then if you're going to go back into the portal, you got to identify and find the pieces that you need and be able to lure them there. So it's going to be a long off season for Mel Tucker. There's no talk of national championships this year. There shouldn't be, especially coming out of last year when they were very high on the hog in a lot of ways and saying that the next step was to win it all going into this year. They fell far short of that, and maybe a little bit of humbling that they got in that.
Yeah. Do you have any idea what his philosophy is? Is it to go half and half on portal and bringing guys in, or is it to use it sparingly, or how does he want to use the portal?
Ultimately, he wants to use it sparingly, but, you know, that's kind of, I think, and I don't even know if we can say this is a Mel Tucker situation. This is a college football situation because it's so new. Right. I mean, we don't know how, you know, I mean, sometimes new coaches come in and they just want to hit a reset and get whatever type of guys that they want in there. Is that good or bad? We're finding that out in real time. Because I think there's something that's lost in terms of building a brotherhood that people talk about.
Yes.
When you have guys gone through 3, 4, 5 years together and pass on those lessons, when you're bringing guys in from the portal that are there for a year, I mean, almost like free agency, you kind of lose that in terms of what college football has been. I'm not saying right or wrong. I mean, it's what it is and what it's going to be, but it's going to take some adjustment. And how are these kids prepared for that, you know, in that 18 to 23-year-old range? I mean, you know, you think about the way minor league baseball goes when guys are, you know, 17, 18, 19 years old, they're going through the ranks. They don't care about winning. That's the difference here.
Right.
You know, this is caring about winning. This isn't developmental.
Right.
So it's fascinating kind of watching a lot of these things, the NIL, the immediate eligibility of transfers, all these things playing out in real time. We're seeing probably the most drastic change in college football since probably post-World War II. And it's all coming at once in different areas.
Exactly, Chris. And this, what's interesting is one of the words that is thrown around a lot in the last few years in intercollegiate athletics is culture. And I don't know if you're heavy on the transfer portal. I don't know if you're heavy on the transfer portal. I don't know how you can form a culture.
It's hard. It's hard. I mean, you can say and talk about culture all you want.
Yeah.
That's not how it works, right? Culture is established over time.
Right.
And you can try and force culture. You can try but sometimes it has to be organic. Sometimes it's things that are outside of your realm, that it's just the guys themselves, that the coaches have nothing to do with. You know, the players, the kids who come in that first week in the summer and they're just getting to know the university and they've got an older player that's showing them around and getting them kind of adjusted to life in the dorms and those sort of things that really set the bar for what the program is and what the culture is. When you've got guys that have on stop two and stop three in their college career, where's the pass along? Where's, you know, in my industry, many, many years ago, there used to be, a pass along of institutional knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's changed. And that's been a dramatic change in our industry. And I feel like that's kind of changing now with guys getting in the portal and saying, you know what, let's just get out of here. Like, for example, look at a guy like Damian Terry.
Yes.
The Michigan State guy from Erie.
Yep.
He comes in as a 4-star recruit. Damian Terry would have been gone the moment that Connor Cook got that starting
No job question.
In 2013.
Yep.
And he could have been somewhere else playing, but instead and in fact, I think he got his one start at Penn State at the end of his junior year.
He did. Yep.
So, I mean, guys like that, I mean, that are program guys, you know, whether it be the coach's decision or their decision, they're getting broomed out. And those are the guys that really are what your culture is. It's the bedrock. Those are the bedrock guys that go through it on those July days in running gassers because they love the sport, they love the program, whatever it might be. They're not trying to necessarily get to that next level. They want to, but sometimes guys just are doing it for the love of the game and the love of the program. And I don't know. I mean, you know, if that changes, I mean, I think it's a very big tightrope for coaches right now, I think. And particularly Mel Tucker, I mean, he's a guy that, you know, kind of set the curve for that in some ways.
Yep.
So,
well,
it's fascinating to watch, that's for sure.
Well, you're bedrock to us, so we appreciate that. I appreciate you, and look forward to seeing you as always, my friend. Thanks so much, Chris.
All right, see you. Take care.
Chris Hilary, Detroit Free Press. Penn State, Michigan State coming up tonight in the Jordan Center at 6:30. All right. Of course, we have Santa tonight from 6 to 7. Talk to Santa Magic Radio. So just remember that. That'll be in that time block right there. So a lot going on in the transfer portal. Now over 1,000 guys are in it. Lots and lots of news dealing with the transfer portal. And sometimes I wonder about the enthusiasm of the fans when it comes to what gets them more excited, player movement or the games. Now, I know there are certain games, for example. Penn State plays Ohio State, Penn State plays Michigan. I got it. Certain games, like, okay, you're locked in. But sometimes I wonder if the movement of players is more exciting and more dynamic to a certain part of the fan base, you know, between signing periods, transfer portals, things like that, than the games. I mean, I'm just wondering that. That's all. I just wonder sometimes. Before we continue, I do want to make one quick note here, and that we don't forget. And that is, this is December 7th. I realize that the vast majority of that generation, including both my parents, who lived through it. My dad was 9 at the time, and my mom was 5. Pearl Harbor was attacked on this day in 1941, 81 years ago. So there are some of you of that wonderful generation, that beautiful generation, that are still with us. And I just want to make sure that you understand that I've never forgotten that date. So December 7th, 1941. As Franklin Roosevelt said, a date that will live in infamy. I just want to make sure we don't forget that. As for Matt, he's not going to forget December 7th because Aaron Judge re-signed. The day the Yankees stayed even and didn't get better. They got better by keeping him, because without him, they're going to be in deep trouble. We're going to talk more about that in the next half hour. Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.